Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, Zarin.
Yo, Dave, what is up, my man?
Zarin, do you know what's ridiculous?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked me that. Did you know that sharks are older than the Atlantic Ocean?
How could that be? Now, that doesn't make any sense.
Because there was oceans, right? And Pangaea was a big supercontinent. And then when the continent broke apart, sharks already existed. They existed before there was an Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, yeah.
You want something that's crazier? Sharks are older than the rings of Saturn.
What?
Yes. You want to know something even crazier?
I would be into it.
Sharks are older than the North Star, Polaris.
Sharks are really old, huh?
Right. Exactly. I mean, like, I knew like they're older than trees, but they're older than the North Star. That blew my mind. When I heard someone reference that, I was like, that can't be right. I looked it up. It's totally right. And not only that, they're older than the rings of Saturn too. I was like, when did we get the rings of Saturn? What the hell? I thought that was like, it kind of came with the planet. No, it was only a little while ago.
That is ridiculous, Aaron.
Yes. So there you go. That's
also,
all I got for you.
In that same vein, it's believed that dolphins had legs. Ridiculous, right?
Yes. Have you ever seen them in utero? Pigs, dolphins, and humans almost look identical in the womb. So like go like up to like, you know, I forget what month it, or you know what trimester, or somewhere in the second trimester, but like around like 8 weeks, 9 weeks, 10 weeks, 11 weeks. Well, like, you know, in the first trimester, totally identical. And then somewhere in the second trimester, they diverge enough. You're like, oh, that's a pig. That's not a person.
Totally.
No, that's
wild.
A dolphin. Yeah, totally. But they have hair, they have finger nubs, the whole bit.
Huh. No wonder that those researchers in the 70s got so into them that they decided to, you know, form a relationship with a dolphin.
Yes, one of these ones that nature doesn't smile upon.
That's right. Well, I'll give you that. Sharks being older than everything is pretty ridiculous.
Right?
But do you know what else is ridiculous?
No, I'm here for it, though.
Going from running the franchising operation of one of the most iconic clothing brands of the 80s to rigging the second biggest sporting event in the world.
Wait, what?
This is Ridiculous Crime, a podcast about absurd and outrageous capers, heists, and cons. It is always 99% murder-free, and it is always 100% ridiculous.
You damn right.
Zarin, do you notice anything different about me?
You're not Elizabeth?
Yeah, you know, like I got a haircut and I'm holding a healthy-sized white goose.
Oh, specifically about you. Yes, no, I mean, yes, your white goose, the haircut. Yeah, you look fantastic. Normal either.
Okay, so truth be told, I did want to draw your attention to the fact that I, in fact, am not Elizabeth Dutton. But I did spend the last week doing all the things I could find in body switching movies to try to make this happen. See nice. That glass box you're leaning against?
Yes.
That's a Zoltar machine.
Whoa! How'd you get that into headquarters? That's nuts.
Didn't work. I tried to get a fortune chain, nothing. Okay. So then, like, I'm rummaging around my neighbor's trash and I found this mysterious skull looking thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I put it on and I thought a lot about Judge Reinhold, rest in power, King. Also unsuccessful. Nothing happened. So finally, Zarin, I was getting pretty frustrated, but I had one more idea.
All right, lay it on me.
I got a Don Knotts mask, which wasn't easy to find.
I bet not.
Then I hit my head so hard that I went into concussion protocol.
Okay.
And then I jumped into a lake while chanting, I wish, I wish, I wish I were a fish. Yes. Now, that didn't turn me into Elizabeth. It did turn me into a limpet, but that was no good. So I had to fight my way out back to that.
No, so being an animated fish, how long did that last for you?
It was heaven. Nobody bothered me. I could read. I could smoke my pipe under there. Oh, it was so good. All right. Truth be told, Elizabeth got called away on a case and asked me to put on her ceremonial purple wig, don her wiener straw and her Crocs.
Perfect. You look amazing.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So if you and the rude dudes will indulge me, here we go.
All right, please.
So we've gone through a lot of criminal origin stories in the last year and a half or so, wouldn't you say?
Oh, completely. Yeah. It's our thing.
There are lots of different patterns. You're probably thinking, patterns, Dave?
Yeah, patterns, Dave? What kind of patterns have you noticed?
Great question. Yeah, like patterns of how our protagonists found themselves as crime doers.
Totally.
At the risk of being overly reductivist, I would love for us to catalog these one day. It's just human, right? Like, our brains are built for pattern matching.
Totally, and we do a lot of this work. We could at least do the groundwork of cataloging it all.
Exactly. It would be a service to society.
Yeah.
Now, I won't go in too far to that today because it would take a lot more persistence and diligence. And frankly, I'm lazy and I'm imprecise. Okay. I'm more of a Pisces, Zarin.
But you know yourself, which is the most important.
That's right. So, but here are a few. Like, one, we've talked about people who had rough upbringings and irresponsible parents who taught them at an early age to do whatever they can to survive. And they took that and ran with it and they became criminals, right?
Totally. Completely.
Second group, we've had people who get into a pickle. Maybe it's money trouble. Mm-hmm. And then some kind of illegal behavior turns out to be the most direct path out of there.
Yes. Yes. Often doesn't work if they're on this show.
Right. And then there's another category. This is people who try the straight life. They go to school. They get their first job. Maybe they get another job. Something like that. Sure. And then when they're faced with what that looks like, they peer down that long tunnel and they shake their heads in disgust. Nah, not for me. To this, to that, too boring, too much work.
Yes, definitely. We have a lot of them.
Now, I don't begrudge anyone their choices across all these categories, but purely in terms of their entertainment value, I think you're like me. I really like that third category.
Yes. Yes, I do too.
And maybe it's, maybe it's because it's so different from me, and yet I totally get it. And as an adult, sure, I've had those kind of fantasies.
Yeah, the outlaw fantasy.
Yeah. And there's kind of a big piece of this in like Chuck Palahniuk's Fight Club, or at least the movie version.
Yeah. And totally. Even also in the book version. I read it. It's there.
Okay. So the person I came to talk to you about, his name is Flavio Briatore.
Ooh, I like that name.
He belongs in that third number. He is now a mega, mega rich playboy, but he didn't start out that way.
Okay.
So let me tell you about Flavio. He was born in 1950 in a small town in Italy called Verzuolo. This is in the Piedmont region in the foothills of the Alps, just south of Turin or Torino.
Okay. So like far north Italy.
I had about 4 years of high school Italian and like two and a half years of college Italian. So get used to a lot of obnoxious Italian pronunciations. It's going to start coming.
I love it. It'll make up for all my terrible pronunciations.
It's so much fun. So Flavio's parents, they were elementary school teachers, but he failed out of public high school twice and finally just barely passed in a private school.
Okay.
He said he just didn't care much about school and he looked for the easiest classes to get by. And even much later, he told interviewers that he had zero interest in reading books. Quote, first I'll do the Italian. Non mi piace e non ho tempo. So I don't like it and I don't have time. As in, he's literally never read a book in his life.
It's like Al Michaels never eating a vegetable.
That's right. And as he says, from a very early age, he knew he was meant for this different path. Yeah. I can't help but love the way this guy talks, and all the more so to the Italian ear, but it holds up pretty well in translation too. Here's another quote. If you were born in the middle of the Congo, you will not say that you have been lucky. I was not born in the Congo, but in those mountains as a child, I felt a certain malaise. I felt that I was one without roots. When asked what I wanted to do when I was older, if the fireman, the lawyer, or the notary, I replied that I wanted to get out of there, first of all, from those roughnesses, from those labors, from those sacrifices. And you can hear him saying, like, Not for me. No thanks. Too hard. I don't want to do work, per se.
Yeah. I'm against this whole labor thing.
He wanted lots and lots of money, not the paltry rewards that come from hard work and giving of yourself.
Of course.
Zarin, can you feel him on this?
Oh, I mean, I'm relating deeply. I'm like, oh, man, I feel you. I also want to roll downhill.
So he falls into a series of starter jobs. Okay. One is a ski instructor. One is a restaurant manager. He opens up his own restaurant. He called it, and this is this weird dialect, so I'm probably going to murder this one. It's got an umlaut in it. It's like Tribula, T-R-I-B-U-L-A with an umlaut.
Ah, yeah, like we're German and Italian meat in Northern Italy.
Yeah, like Alsatian or, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I found a couple of translations for it. Either someone who never sits still and gets into everywhere, or someone who will do whatever it takes to get what he wants.
Okay, these both fit for him. So
yeah, I can see. And that ends up being his nickname. That's what he's known as early in life. Tribula, the restaurant, didn't last long. He racked up too much debt and it folded.
Okay.
So next up, he got a job as an insurance salesman. And he actually, relatively speaking, made a bunch of money doing that.
As an insurance salesman?
Yeah, yeah. Enough to buy his first car, which was a Fiat 600.
Okay.
But, you know, he found that that too was too much work. So it was on to the next.
Okay.
Here's how he described it, Zarin. Quote, everybody in Italy was selling insurance. It was an easy way to make money. You didn't need any background. You just had to talk nice. And I was fantastic at that. The company wanted to keep me because I was considered one of the best, but I just felt it was not my job.
So he's somebody who's charming. He gets people to buy into him. They like him. And he's like, you should give me some of your money and I'll give you this thing. It works great. They're like, oh, I love this guy. I'm going to do it. And he's like, I could take this bigger than this. Like, this is insurance is too small for my talents.
Yeah, he realized he could be selling grit subscriptions. He could be selling cocaine. It didn't really matter. People are going to buy whatever it is he puts in front of
exactly.
them. And to his credit, you'll see some pictures on Instagram, and I'll share some after this. Like, he is a handsome son of a gun. He's got that flowing Italian hair.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that helps always.
And like, it starts black, and then over time, it becomes like salt and pepper, like that cool Italian gray.
Yeah, he looks like he could be in maybe an F1 driver. Maybe he's
totally.
Like, okay.
So he skips the insurance job. He's done with that. He takes his talents to Cuneo, which is the biggest city near him and capital of the region.
Okay, yeah, familiar.
You know, he goes knocking on doors. He finds a job at the Paramatti Vernici Paint Company.
Okay.
His job there is the assistant to the owner, this guy named Attilio Dutto. Not like Dutton without the N.
Huh, okay, word.
Needless to say, this is probably Flavio's first real brush with what we in the import-export business call professionals.
Ah, nice.
The previous owner of this paint company, a cat named Michele Sindona, he was a friend of ours, as they say, right? Though not a friend of mine, because I'm not in the biz.
Yes, I know, yeah. Like, it's when they say the Cosa Nostra is our thing, and you are a friend of ours. That's the same group.
Exactly. So this guy's business, Michele Sindona, former owner of the paint company, was laundering money for the Gambino crime family.
Yes, they make a lot of shows up in this show.
They really do. They're like the thread that weaves through the whole thing. Sindona was unfortunately convicted and sentenced for life for, quote, contracting the assassination of the lawyer appointed to liquidate his failed Italian banks.
Ooh.
He's sent to prison. He dies of cyanide poisoning, which, you know, probably is Aaron. That's just a strange coincidence, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that happens often in prison. You're like,
there's cyanide everywhere in prison.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows if you want to buy free cyanide, cheap cyanide, you go to someone in prison, you go, how much is it for the boys?
Yeah, that's right. Like, do you want that? You want some Pruno with it?
Yeah, exactly.
So, in another strange coincidence, in 1979, Flavio's boss and the new owner of the paint company, Attilio Dutto, he gets assassinated in a car bombing, Zarin.
What?
And no one knows who did it. No one has any clue what criminal organization active in the 1970s in Italy and abroad would have done such a thing. Now,
just a mystery.
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't even pull up a suspects together because there's we're starting from square one. We got nothing, boss.
Yeah, could be just a bad engine. Who knows?
That's right. Now, since Flavio had nothing to do with this.
Did they ask anyone, is this a British car? Because maybe
maybe it's a Jaguar.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, since Flavio had nothing to do with this, I don't think we need to count it as a 1%. This is just kind of a thing that happened out in the world, right?
Totally. Just loosely connected. It just happened to happen near.
So, at any rate, after Dutto dies, the paint company collapses and files for bankruptcy. And when the courts open the books, sure enough, things look dirtier than a white t-shirt after three bowls of mom's spaghetti and a Detroit hip-hop cipher.
Yes.
Who's left holding the bag? Flavio Briatore.
Oh, Flavio.
His fingertips are all over the cookbooks.
Mm-hmm.
So he catches a fraudulent bankruptcy charge. And I'll say, you know, so this was his first brush with professionals. It's also like the first waypoint in the escalating criminal career of Flavio Briatore.
So yeah, he's graduating pretty quick.
Yeah, he's like, all right, I got my ski instructor badge done. I got my restaurant badge. Now I got my bankruptcy badge.
Yeah, in Italy, the ski instructor is like the American lifeguard. It's just like something handsome men do for a living when they're young. It's like, you know, being like a water boat or water ski instructor in the Caribbean, or, you know, it's like something you find handsome people doing. You're like, okay, of course. And he's like, oh, how do I make this pay? I'll go be a restaurant manager. I'm Italian. And then he's like, oh, how do I go get into business? And then he finds himself attached to all of this. My question is, where else can he go from here, Dave?
It keeps going up. Let me tell you, it keeps coming up. So while the charges are brewing, he moves to Milan, the big city, right? To work on a stock exchange. He's like,
yes.
So I've got the gift of gab. I don't know. I want to work register. So I want to go to the stock exchange.
Yeah. I mean, that's the big money town.
Now in Milan, he crosses paths with a guy whose name you may recognize. Ricardo Lisportsac. No. Luciano Benetton.
Okay.
A little bit of history. Benetton, the clothing brand, was founded in 1965, but it didn't really become a worldwide phenomenon until the 80s.
Yeah, and I honestly did not know that there was a guy named Benetton. I always assumed it was like Haagen-Dazs, was just a made-up name.
Yeah, yeah, sure enough, he's been at it for years and years, and finally it hits in the 80s.
Yeah, huh.
So as of 1979, Benetton had opened 5 stores in the U.S.
Okay.
He sees Flavio, he's like, I like the cut of your jib. He makes Flavio the head of U.S. operations and franchising in 1982.
Okay.
Nice come up. So yeah. While he's in Milan, he's got that going. He's got the stock exchange. He also gets to his own criming. Flavio picks up a side gig as a card player. Zarin, did you know that Flavio Briatore is one of the greatest poker players of all time?
No, I've never even heard his name in the poker community. Not that I'm a big member of the poker community, but still.
That's because it's not true.
Ah, there we go.
Zarin, the kind of card playing Flavio excelled in involved lies, a team of accomplices, elaborate schemes, and probably muscle and guts.
Ah, okay, that kind of card playing.
Yeah, so his accomplices included, 1, a real count who provided his villa as a location.
Oh, smart.
A lawyer and his wife who had lots of social connections. That's where the marks come from.
Okay, good.
A fake marquee who was actually a very skilled card player.
Okay.
TV journalist for credibility.
Huh, smart.
And finally, you've got Flavio, who's something of a front of the house guy / producer. He made sure the events were very opulent. Lots of waiters, Rolls Royces, beautiful women, etc.
Totally.
So here's how it went down. The team of heavy hitters would identify a rich person to target, invite them to an exclusive dinner party where they were told there may be very good business deals available, as well as very good connections to make.
Okay.
To the marks, it looked pretty legit, right? Oh, yeah. Look at that. There's a count. There's a marquee. There's like a TV journalist I recognize.
Totally.
And sometimes a guest who was, quote, an Egyptian general. I wonder if that's like Gaddafi.
I mean, imagine if you're really rich and Italian at this point, this is way better than going to like a Silvio Berlusconi bunga bunga party. Or it's like, oh, at least this one is good conversation.
Yeah, there you go. So Briatore would play a famous record producer with connections to lots of Italian pop stars.
Oh,
and just
like
given
it.
His looks, yeah, he could totally pull that
it.
Off.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, at some point in the middle of the party, maybe a lull in conversation, someone would pipe up with, I just got the most wild idea. How about a game of cards? And of course, everyone would be like, yeah.
Oh, I love that. I love cards.
And if the mark didn't go for it, the pressure would just keep ratcheting it up. Like, come on, what kind of a... you know, anti-Italian person are you? You don't play cards? So eventually they got them into the game. The game is fixed in multiple ways. Okay. They used rigged card dealing devices, like
the
things that they use to distribute the cards.
Yeah, like the shoe. Okay, not the shoe, but the actual...
It's called like a sabot or a sabo.
Okay, yes. The dealing machine.
Yeah, they used special lacquer on the cards that told them what card was what.
Oh, wow. Like if you wore glasses, you'd be able to see something on the back of the card?
Yeah, or maybe like bumps on the card.
Okay.
And then plus, they wouldn't have the same person just run the table all night. That would be kind of amateurish.
Yeah.
They would have different people win. And at the end, after the guy left, they would split the take.
Ah, nice. So multiple shills sitting at the table with the mark.
Yeah. And I think this is what's referred to as the salami move, where you steal a large sum of money by splitting it up into lots of tiny slices.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what it's called. And it's very Italian.
There you go. So they're so good at this that sometimes marks would get cleaned out and then asked to come back and play again. Can you imagine?
They want to get their money. Like, give me another shot of my cash.
Eventually they get caught, they get brought to trial, they get convicted. This is all going on between, say, like 1984 and 1987.
Okay.
Briatore gets 4.5 years in prison between 20 charges relating to this scam and then the previous fraudulent bankruptcy charges that have been brewing all this time.
Okay, okay. Those are still over his head. Damn, 20 yeah. charges. Oof.
But those get knocked down to 14 months on appeal.
Okay.
A little better. So he's facing over a year of jail time. And he's not a guy who believes in things like putting in work or doing time. So what do you think he did, Zarin?
I'm guessing he goes on the run.
You are correct.
Yeah. I love
Flavio
this game.
Flavio hops on a plane and heads to the Virgin Islands, lovely St. Thomas.
Oh, very loose extradition treaties. Yes, good call.
So let's let a series of ads be our invisible plane as we join him on a spiritual journey of our own, right?
All right.
We'll see you in 2 and 2.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Springtime is all about fresh air and fresh starts, and it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security. It's the only home security system I use and recommend. Here's why I love it. With the days getting longer and the weather warming up, we're out and about a lot more, and that applies to criminals too. I don't have to worry because Simply Safe blankets my whole home in protection. It has sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more. And there are indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over my property day and night. It's not just cameras. Simply Safe has professional monitoring agents who keep watch on your home when you aren't there. Agents can stop crime in real time by speaking to intruders through the wireless indoor camera, warning them that they're being recorded and the police are on their way. Sounds great, right? There's no contract, and they offer a 60-day money-back guarantee. So trying Simply Safe is risk-free. Get 20% off any new Simply Safe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplysafe.com/ridiculouscrime. That's simplysafe.com/ridiculouscrime. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpert.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with the Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Zarin, take the cucumber slices out of your eyes. Put down the coconut.
Sorry, I was just trying to rest for a second. I didn't realize I was fast. 2 and 2. You said 2 and 2. I should have guessed.
Look alive. We're back.
Yes, okay. I'm ready. Okay. Let's do this.
So where were we? Flavio Briatore, head of a bunco crew and a recognized business fraud specialist, was sentenced to 14 months in prison. And instead of surrendering to the state, he had hightailed it for the beach.
Yeah, so he's on the run to Virgin Islands, U.S. Virgin Islands.
Yeah, like, can he just do that? Like, can anyone just do that? How do you think this all shook out?
It depends on how much money he has as, like, you know, get free money. Like, he's going to need to bribe a lot of people, and then he's also going to need to not have so much on him that he looks like somebody just to hit and kill. You know, he's got to be on that real sweet spot of having just the right amount of money.
Yeah. So looking at the history books, it seems easier than that. Like, it turns out, yeah, he can get do all this.
Totally.
Eventually, he's granted amnesty and allowed to return to Europe as a free man.
Oh, he had plenty of get free money then.
And eventually, as of 2010, he was cleared of any residual responsibility, or as the courts in Turin said, he was ordered rehabilitated, resulting in the extinction of, quote, of any criminal effect of the conviction.
Oh, wow. He has like FU money then.
That is scot-free.
Yes. Wow.
But he wasn't sitting idly on a beach in St. Thomas. Well, maybe he was, but his money, Zarin, his money was working hard on his behalf.
What was his money doing, David?
You see, by 1989, there were 800 Benetton franchise stores in the U.S.
That's
and as
right.
the head of U.S. franchising, Mr. Flavio Briatore owned a piece of every one of them.
Oh, my God.
So at this point, he's as good as made, thanks to his old pal Luciano Benetton, and now he's swimming in cash.
Yes. Oh my God, dude, he almost had to be a billionaire by then.
There were so many Benetton stores in the U.S. that the franchisees started to complain about the competition from other Benetton stores.
I bet.
And
I
mean, that
heavy saturation. I remember the 80s.
Yeah. It's like all the Starbucks jokes about like Starbucks opens a Starbucks in the restroom of another Starbucks.
Yes, totally.
And the other thing that's going on around that time is the health of the brand and the business actually took a dive. So like by the end of the 80s, nobody was really into Benetton anymore.
Yeah, they watered down the brand and they had to rely on that cool, like, look at all of the multicultural people we can put into an ad campaign. That's what they were known for.
Yeah, which is also kind of interesting. Like, it's the first like really brand that decides they're going to do what you now call as like woke, but it's really like the first multicultural brand for the U.S. that's not U.S. centric.
Totally. United Colors of Benetton was actually a really important moment in, like, if you want to talk about like the progress of diversity and the inclusion of lots of different ideas of what beauty is. All of a sudden, that was the first time it wasn't just like, you know, the 1970s and early 80s type of like feathered hair, white blonde models.
And it's like helping to lead American teens out of thinking that like, it's all about us. America is the best.
Yes,
it was like,
totally.
Oh no, there are other great places too. And other great people all over the world.
Totally. We became a more internationally minded people thanks to Benetton. No lie.
So we got that. Flavio had what he wanted. He was loaded and he's looking for his next opportunity.
Totally. And everyone else is doing the work for him.
Yeah. So in 1989, when, you know, he's now 800 franchise stores strong, Luciano Benetton says, like, hey, you did great with that. Why don't you be the head of merchandising for our Formula One team?
Ooh.
Shortly thereafter, he's made team principal. So
I knew he had Formula One energy. He totally has Formula One energy.
Yeah. Well, so like he goes from like, I'm designing and selling the hats to running the entire freaking team. So to be clear, this is a guy who knew absolutely nothing about cars and racing and the technology under the hood and wore that proudly. And
yes,
he's now in charge of a very expensive team in one of the biggest sports in the world.
Wow. This is why, Zarin, like,
it's like,
it's crazy. Like, when you have like rich people, they make some of the dumbest decisions. Like, I was just seeing something recently about the money that was spent in the UK on COVID tracking, and it went through like this list of peerage. It was like, oh, this person who ran this racehorse company. Like, it was nobody who was, like, no one was qualified. It was just, who did you know? And then they were like, why don't you run this thing that's super important? I always blows me
flowing
away.
Yeah,
yes.
Just like money flowing out of taps. Yeah. It's like, to me, it's like if Ted Lasso was an extremely cool, extremely rich Italian guy with great hair and no folksy homespun wisdom and believes in making money the easy way, not through hard work and perseverance. And a guy who dated Heidi Klum, had kids with her, dated Naomi Campbell and married supermodels. Then it would be like Ted Lasso.
Okay, there you go.
Well, now, let me stop here.
Please.
Zarin, yes. What do you know about Formula One? Are you into it or do you know anyone who's really into it?
I used to be really into it. There was like, I'm big into open wheel racing and I liked it a lot, but then somewhere, like, you know, as I became an adult, I just didn't have the time to follow it so like devotedly. Okay. And then I kind of fell away. And so it's much like hockey for me now, where I have a strong feeling about the sport, but I probably don't know any of the best racers or any of the best hockey players. But if you sit me down and have me watch a race or watch a hockey game, I'm going to be fully into it and want to know who's doing what. And I'm like, oh, who's that guy? Because so I still love the sport, but I've checked out for a while.
So is it, I did a little research because I don't know anything about Formula One. Is it like, what draws you to it? Is it like the strategy and the storylines?
Well, it's the opposite of NASCAR for me in a lot of ways. NASCAR, there's a lot of like strategy about position and like speed on turns and coming out of turns. Whereas Formula One, it's, I find much more of a dance between the drivers. I mean, NASCAR is that too, don't get me wrong. And maybe that's not the best comparison, but it is like much more akin to flying and air races for me, where it's like you're moving through space through, and not just like on the track, but you know, your float as well. Like, so coming over a rise or whatever. So you're moving in like a four-dimensional race. Like you have time, you have space, and you're doing all this. So these guys are managing all this stuff, but then also, they're so fast. It's the gutsiness of it. I love that these guys, I mean, they're making decisions that it'll take hundreds of feet before they could like see the result of that decision, or they're having to anticipate hundreds of feet ahead of them. You know, like that's amazing to me. So imagine doing something that is split second timing, but the split second is over hundreds of feet or thousands of feet in some instances. So
that's, thank you. Yeah, no, that's beautiful. Like I totally get it now. So just for the Rude Dudes, let me give you a few stats just to give you a sense of just how popular Formula One is around the world. Mm-hmm. Take like the last season of Game of Thrones, averaged 44 million people watching every episode, okay? The 2023 Super Bowl was watched by 56 million people globally. The cumulative TV audience for the 2022 Formula One season was 1.54 billion. And the average viewership for each race was 70 million.
Yeah, that's F1.
It's huge.
It's the biggest sport in the world. There's a reason for that. It's the most impressive in terms of like what people think about sports with winning and tradition and stories and brave performances. But then you add in all the engineering, and then you add in all the technical innovations, then you add in just the like the fact you can die so easily. I mean, like you're not dying on a baseball field usually. You're not dying on a football field. It's like these guys can die every race.
So back to Flavio, right? He's now head of the Team Benetton. He had some successes early on. He is the one who brought in a driver whose name you might recognize, Michael Schumacher.
Oh my God, one of the greatest ever, other than like Ayrton Senna.
So he brings him in 1991. For someone who doesn't know Formula One, can you compare Schumacher's rep to another athlete, like maybe the Intimidator, Dale Earnhardt?
Yeah, for racing, Intimidator Dale Earnhardt's a good one. For the competitiveness, like the steeliness of Jordan. I mean, just that single-minded, I'm going to beat you and I'm going to like it.
So yeah, this is Flavio's guy. Schumacher won a bunch of races and two driver's championships under Flavio in the early 90s.
Nice.
And as much as it brought laurels, this also brought some scrutiny to the Benetton team. Because remember, this is a sport that's all about fiddling with really small things to get as many advantages as you can.
Totally.
In this case, there was suspicion that Benetton was messing with the fuel tank filters.
Oh.
So in 1994, the Benetton team was caught removing what's called the anti-fire filter. Uh-huh. This is a filter that prevents the engine from catching fire from getting too much fuel all at once.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can imagine, getting rid of that there filter, now you just got yourself a much faster fuel feed, which means a faster car. So everybody wanted to do it.
Totally.
How did the Formula One officials know something was up? Well, during a pit stop, a Benetton car caught fire. That was a pretty strong clue. And this is an outrage. Are they going to get away with this? How are they going to get away with this? So at the hearing, Flavio Briatore employed what we in the litigation business call the Cranberries defense.
Ooh, what is the Cranberries defense?
The pop group The Cranberries came out with an album in 1993 titled Everybody Else Is Doing It, So Why Can't We?
Yes.
Flavio B claimed that the entire field had also removed their anti-fire filters. And also he threw in for good measure that it's really the fault of the fuel tank manufacturer. I don't know if that was like a forbidden fruit thing or what. But that was enough. That was enough for the Formula One organization to find Flavio and the Benetton team guilty, but with no punishment levied at all.
Huh. Wow.
Which starts to be kind of a pattern for Flavio.
I'm noticing.
That same year, Benetton was also found guilty of hiding an illegal traction control system in one of their cars. And he admitted it existed. when they asked for the specs, this is like the governing board of the Formula One, they asked him for the specs, and he said, I asked the manufacturer for it, but they said it was proprietary, so they wouldn't give it to me.
Can't blame me. You know what?
Yeah. Ultimately, again, he's found guilty, but he's not punished. So in 1996, he loses his goose with the golden egg. Schumacher leaves Benetton for Ferrari, and shortly thereafter, in 97, Flavio is fired from the Benetton racing team. They're like, of course, you're not producing anymore.
Yeah, if you lose Schumacher, and when he went to Ferrari, he becomes known as this Ferrari. Most people, if you ask him, who does Schumacher drive for? It's going to be Ferrari. So you lost not only the Golden Goose, but the legacy and everything. So,
but that was just the beginning, Zarin, of the deep, flaming, crater-like impact he would have on the sport.
Oh, really?
Yeah, let me give you a quote to give you a little sense.
Please.
Opining after the next stretch of Flavio's Formula One career, which we're going to talk about now, Richard Williams in The Guardian wrote, quote, Formula One had never seen anything like Flavio Briatore. With his almost buffoonishly exaggerated version of the typical Italian playboy's bella figura and his self-proclaimed total ignorance of anything to do with the history of the workings of Grand Prix racing, he could hardly have presented more of a contrast with the unglamorous collection of enthusiasts, many of them former drivers or engineers, who ran the sport and its teams before his arrival in their midst 20 years ago. Now, Flavio stuck around after being fired from Benetton, working for Renault, heading up the group that supplied engines for other teams.
Are you kidding me?
That's right. He also managed some drivers individually who were so drawn to his cult of personality that they're like, oh yeah, make me Michael Schumacher.
Sure.
Now, in a stroke of luck, Renault bought the Benetton team in 2000 and installed our man Flavio back at the lead again.
Are you kidding me?
That's right.
The Arnault family's insane. What the hell? Okay, fine. Go on.
There's one more minor bump in the road.
Sure.
Flavio got caught up in a scandal called Spygate in 2007. This related to Renault, under Flavio, getting information about a rival driver's car illegally. Yes. Now, if you've been paying attention at all over the last 8 hours, I mean 30 minutes or so, you know what comes next, right?
Oh, yes.
To be fair, he was only tangentially involved with this one. But yes, he was found culpable but not punished. It's good to be rich.
Seriously. It's the best way to be.
Okay. So now we're in 2008, heading into the Singapore Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. Team Flavio has hit a dry spell. They haven't won a race in 2 years. Renault is so down on the whole thing, they are thinking about pulling out of Formula One.
Oh, damn.
Imagine the feels from Flavio, right? I'm a winner. I am only about winning. To quote the great philosopher poet Luis Mario Fries, I ain't going out like that. I ain't going out like that.
Yes.
It's be real.
Ain't going out.
Now, Zarin, let me see if I can put all of this in front of you.
Please.
You're a very rich, very famous clothing magnate with supermodels on your arm at all times.
Ah, yes.
You've been found guilty in multiple criminal and civil courts and private organizations, but you've never really been punished.
Ah, yes.
You've been caught bending the rules so hard they crumble in your manicured hands on more than 2 occasions.
Like I said, it's the best life.
And now the team you run may close up shop if you don't win soon.
But
what are you
going to
do? What are you going to do? Do you pick up what I'm putting down here?
Oh, yeah. I think I'm going to run. That's my guess.
Okay. Well, wait. Zarin?
Yes.
Beep, boop, boop, beep. Pick up the phone.
Oh, hello. Hello.
Hey, Zarin, is this a good time?
Actually, I'm recording right now, but go on.
Okay, great. Close your eyes. I want you to picture it.
Oh, yes. My eyes closed.
It's the day before the Singapore Grand Prix. Your name is Giuseppe Irlandese, Irish Joe from Naples. Napoledan Giuseppe Irlandese. You are a master mechanic who recently transferred from a high-paying desk job at Renault Corporate to work with the Formula One team. This is the thrill of a lifetime for you. Your mechanic skills are a bit rusty, wah, wah, as you've been more of a spreadsheet jockey for the last 8 years. You can't wait to be baptized by Formula One engine grease. Your coveralls are pristine. Your wife brought you a brand new set of tools, and your mom, who you and your wife and your 2 children still live with, packed you a lunch with a special slice of panettone, the good kind, wrapped up with a bow.
Nice.
You see, Zarin, you're what the Italians call a mamone, a mama's boy.
Sounds
you're
better
looking
than
forward
Italian.
To your... What was that?
Sounds better in Italian.
You're looking forward to your afternoon break when you can go home, hug your wife and kids, kiss your mom on the forehead, then quickly pay a visit to your mistress before heading back to work. Zarin, you have an engine deconstructed on a table in front of you. You're lazily fitting various pieces together, trying to look busy. There's no food or drink allowed in the engine staging area, but you take the occasional surreptitious swig from an Erlenmeyer flask filled with Barolo that you have hidden under the shelf under the table.
Yes, molto buono.
There's a large plate glass window separating the executive offices from the shop floor. Sometimes they have the blinds drawn, but today they're open. You can't hear anything but muffled sounds, but you can see everything going on in there. Your hero, Flavio Briatore, has been in there all morning, sipping espresso, chain-smoking unfiltered Lucky Strikes, and flipping through the Gazzetta dello Sport, the pink newspaper. You see Renault chief engineer Pat Simons dressed in his gleaming white coveralls with his name embroidered about the pocket. It's like a chef's coat. He opens the door to the executive office and takes a seat on the stylish yellow leather sofa in front of Flavio. Pat Simons' hands are holding his hair back as he leans over, avoiding eye contact, and he has a pained expression, sort of a grimace on his face. Flavio looks completely calm. As he puts the pink newspaper down, it almost looks like he has a smile forming out of the corners of his mouth. You see him pick up a landscape sheet of paper. Maybe it's a route map. It's hard to tell. Simons doesn't look up. You see Flavio clap once, and this startles Simons. He snaps to attention. Now he's looking at the sheet of paper, too. Flavio points with his dangling cigarette to one spot. Simons shakes his head no. He raises his eyebrows and points to another place. Simons holds up his hands, palms to the sky, in the classic expression we Americans understand as meh or maybe, but to Italians this means boh. Flavio claps again. This time it's an excited clap. But wait, Flavio's looking around self-consciously. He shoots a glance in your direction. You're worried. Did he notice you staring at them all this time? You swallow hard and quickly aver your eyes, reaching for a ratchet and going to work on any engine bolt you can find, as if it's the most important bolt in the world. Now to your right, you see one of the team's superstar drivers, Nelson Piquet Jr., stride by you and head for the executive office. In his eyes, you see fear and anxiety. You can't help but let your eyes wander back to the big plate glass window, but as the driver reaches the door, the Venetian blinds drop. Show's over. Now what you just witnessed was the leaders of the Renault racing team asking one of their top drivers to strategically crash his car and throw the race to make sure their other driver, Fernando Alonso, can win.
Oh, damn.
Now, Zarin, when we get back, I'll tell you all about Crashgate, the biggest scandal in Formula One history, and how it went down.
Oh, yes.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elia Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations solutions that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Zarin, we're back.
Hey, look at us.
Now, when we left off, we were about to get into Flavio Briatore's biggest jack move of all time, Crashgate.
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to this.
Here's what we know so far. Flavio is very rich, very cool looking, very morally bankrupt Italian businessman, right? He made a fortune franchising Benetton stores after fleecing the rich in Italy by a series of rigged card games. He's been convicted in court and by private organizations, but never actually punished. Now he's in his second stint running a Formula One racing team. His current team is Renault, but it was formed from the ashes of his previous racing team, Benetton.
Yes.
Team Renault had hit on hard times and desperately needed a win to stay relevant. The day before the Singapore Grand Prix, Flavio and the chief engineer convinced one of their drivers, Nelson Piquet Jr., to deliberately crash his car during the race to give Fernando Alonso the win. Alonso is also managed by the same two guys.
Mm-hmm.
Later, according to Piquet Jr., quote, Simons took me aside to a quiet corner and using a map, pointed me to the exact corner on the track where I should crash because, quote, it did not have any cranes that would allow a damaged car to be swiftly lifted off the track, nor did it have any side entrances to the track, end quote, which would allow a damaged car to be rolled off the track. Crashing where Simons indicated, quote, would thus necessitate the deployment of a safety car. Alonso, the other driver, wasn't in on any of this and had no idea what was going on around him, giving him plausible deniability.
Oh, that's nice. Brilliant. Smart.
And this is all likely to work out because I didn't know this. Maybe you know this. The Singapore track is known to be very, very narrow.
Mm-hmm.
And in that kind of an environment, kind of like NASCAR, your position before the race means everything.
Yes,
the whole race is kind of bottled up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to make major moves against the field.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
So one thing that has to happen for all this to work is Piquet has to agree to do his part.
Mm-hmm.
Flavio had this in the bag because he'd been working Piquet for months. He told him his contract was up in the air and he may or may not bring him back. He also repeatedly pressured Piquet to extend his option, which is what keeps him from talking to other teams while his status is up in the air.
Oh, he kept him on a short leash.
Yeah, and he's got him totally tenderized by the time he makes this big request. So now it's race day. It's September 28th, 2008. I thought about making this the picture it, but we've done really cool car races before, and I didn't want to just kind of be swimming in your wake, so that's why I kind of pushed it earlier.
Okay.
But I'll tell you about it.
Please.
So Piquet starts the race in 16th place. He crashes right where he's supposed to, at the 17th turn on the 14th lap.
Oh.
He basically, the way he does it is like, he presses hard on the throttle during a right-left turn. He deliberately causes his car to drift out underneath him, and then he just keeps feeding it gas, so it just drifts and then hits the wall.
Okay.
And there's no crane nearby, so the only way to clear the track is to call out the safety car, which basically slows the race at that point.
And he didn't crash into anybody else. He didn't risk anybody else in his crash.
That's right. Just the wall.
Yeah, perfect.
Now, there's one other wrinkle that made this whole thing work, which is that the other driver, Fernando Alonso, he had taken a pit stop two laps prior, and he was the only leading driver in the field who had taken a pit stop at that point in the race.
Oh, so it's timed perfectly.
Yeah, so after the stop, after the safety stop, he's the only one who doesn't need a pit stop. He's done.
Yeah.
Huge, huge advantage.
Huge advantage.
So he had started the race, Alonso, in 15th place, just ahead of Piquet. He ends up winning the race. And the guy who was leading at the time of the crash, who was a driver named Felipe Massa, he finished 13th.
Ooh.
At the time afterwards, Piquet is telling everyone, oh, it was an honest mistake. I just screwed up. Now, this was a huge deal in Formula One.
Yeah.
At the end of the year, Felipe Massa was almost the champion. He fell short of the championship by a single point. And if he had won Singapore, which he should have, he would have easily won the championship.
Oh my God. I would have been furious if I was him.
Right? So Alonso's ill-gotten victory was all probably going to hold until Flavio made one real dumbass mistake.
He fired
Piquet from the Renault Racing Team in July 2009.
No, you can't fire your bag, man.
After all he had done for the team.
Yes.
Piquet was a little upset.
Of course.
So after his firing, he wrote, quote, as a beginner in F1, I could only expect from my team a lot of support and preparation to help me in getting up to the task. Instead, I was relegated as someone who drives the other car with no attention at all. In addition, on numerous occasions, 15 minutes before qualifying in races, my manager and team boss, who's Briatore, would threaten me, telling me if I didn't get a good result, he had another driver ready to put in my place. A manager is supposed to encourage you, support you, and provide you with opportunities. In my case, it was the opposite. Flavio Briatore was my executioner.
Oof.
But that's not all he did, Zarin. Behind the scenes, he's singing like a canary to the Formula One governing body.
Yes, you know I'm not normally for snitches, but snitch on, brother.
I mean, can you imagine? Like, this is Italy, home of the famous organization that tends not to take chances when it comes to even innocent eyewitnesses who could later cause problems.
I'm surprised he's breathing. I mean, honestly, based on what happened to Briatore's first boss back in the day when he first started out, and now he's like, oh, everything, he just happened to die. Like, I'm surprised that if you're going to ask a driver to do this, now they know too much. And we know what happens when you know too much. You either get paid off or you get, you know, pushed off.
Yeah, like, don't fire him. Make him a king for life. Like, you've got the money. Just set
him up. Just let him have a career forever. And then he will be as complicit. He can't ever speak against you because it speaks against everything he has.
Totally. So the Formula One governing body gave Piquet immunity for his cooperation and testimony. Initially, Briatore and Simons denied everything. They even tried to blame Piquet for the idea, which is just an absolute jerk move.
Yeah, exactly.
Eventually, the parent company, Renault, came over the top and accepted responsibility. They said they wouldn't contest the charges, and they said they had accepted the resignations of Briatore and Simons.
Hmm.
Formula One turns around and bans Briatore for life and also refused to license any drivers he had been involved with. Renault, the team, gets banned for 2 years.
Huh.
But that wasn't the end of the controversy. Briatore, being such a proud, you know, fare la bella figura guy, he maintains his innocence, and he says he only resigned for the good of the team. So after getting the Formula One death penalty, he says, quote, I've been betrayed by my own world. In the end, I will win, and you'll see, we'll have a great party.
Oh, God.
I love this.
Most Italian answer ever. Now, did he get involved in FIFA? I mean, like, what's he going to do next?
Wait, let me go on. So we'll have a great party. It will be organized well, and we'll invite all those people who have stayed close to me during these tough times. I feel like it's like the spirit of Rodney Dangerfield, basically.
Yes, totally.
So sure enough, Flavio appealed the ruling to a French court. Uh-huh. Not only did he ask for the Formula One ruling to be overturned, he also asked for €1 million in damages.
Oh, his reputation's been besmirched, of course.
He declares the penalty against him, quote, a legal absurdity, and said the FIA had made a, quote, break of the rules of natural justice.
At least he wasn't getting grand with it.
Now, Zarin, I'll give you one guess as to how this all turned out for him.
He gets reinstated and is now the head of F1.
Pretty close. The French courts order the ruling reversed.
Oh, my God.
They award Flavio not the whole 1 million euros, but a much smaller sum of 15,000 euros for his troubles.
Oh, my God.
There's no word on whether the victory party he threw was actually well organized, but he did say, quote, I'm calm. I did my duty as chief commander of a ship that was risking sinking by resigning. I took moral responsibility for the scandal, but the real story is yet to be written. However, the verdict has given me freedom and pride, and that's fine.
Oh, he is good at talking. You can hear. Yeah, it's like, this guy's going to be charming. And if he has tousled hair, too, forget about it.
Now, the Formula One Association, obviously, they're looking at this and they're like, okay, you've kind of gone over our heads.
Yeah.
So they decide to settle with Briatore and Simons. They do ban them from the big competitions for a few years and also from minor competitions for a couple years. They said the two men had accepted responsibility. But if you look at what Flavio was saying at the time, not really. I've got another quote.
Okay.
Although he may have formally accepted responsibility, he posted this statement on the Formula One website. He had said, you know, I accept, quote, without any admission of a personal guilt in these events and without any recognition of the fact that the decision of the World Council rendered against him would have been well-founded.
I accept that people have said I'm guilty.
Yeah. I accept that you told me to say the word I accept.
Exactly.
At that point, I guess he had had enough of Formula One. And even though his lifetime ban was lifted, he ended that chapter of his criming.
Okay.
And there's more, of course, lots more. But Zarin, I'll leave you with a couple of his recent and current business ventures.
Okay, please.
After Crashgate, He started his own menswear label, Billionaire Couture.
Oh my God.
Which sold jeans with real gold buttons. And you mentioned FIFA earlier. He did actually own the Queens Park Rangers for a little while.
Of course.
You know, a very well-respected team. Ran it into the ground. Ultimately was forced to sell it.
Yeah, a character like that is going to be drawn to FIFA like moth to flame.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's made for him. He also bought a super yacht.
Of course. Oh, yeah. Another thing. Moth flame. Super yacht. Totally is the move.
It was eventually seized for tax evasion. It was sold to Bernie Ecclestone in an assets auction who's come up in the Tony Tetro episode.
Yes, I was just about to say Elizabeth's Tony Tetro episode, right? This Ecclestone guy, we need to do something on him.
And these guys were tight. Like Bernie Ecclestone and Briatore were friends to the end.
Oh, we're coming for you, Ecclestone.
Yeah, there's more because he was also a co-owner in the Queens Park Rangers.
Yeah, see, I detect a taint on this guy.
Yeah, even in researching this one, Marissa uncovered a lot of stuff that's happened in the last 2 years to that guy.
Huh, okay, there we go.
Of course, a few years later, that conviction for tax evasion with the super yacht overturned on appeal.
I want his lawyers or his guy's money. Never, one of the two.
Just never gotten his comeuppance.
No.
And now he runs a company called Majestas or Majestas, M-A-J-E-S-T-A-S.
Well, you know why he's getting away with all this. If he would have robbed the equivalent of like Walgreens, then he would be in behind bars. But, you know, because he's doing all this, it's like, well, come on.
Ripping off a lot of rich people. The mission statement of Majestas is, quote, globally known for iconic top-performing experiences in fine dining, elite entertainment, and luxury hospitality. It includes 4, quote, billionaire locations, which are high-end restaurant/club/theaters in Sardinia, Dubai, Monte Carlo, and Riyadh.
Ah, like, I was guessing Hong Kong.
Picking the arms traders hotspots.
Totally.
And then he's got Twiga Beach Resorts in Italy, London, Monte Carlo, and Doha for good measure.
Okay, Doha, I was going to guess Ibiza, one of the two.
He also owns the Crazy Pizza brand, which has locations in Italy, England, Monaco, and the Middle East. Called Crazy, maybe because the crust doesn't have any yeast in it. It's hard to know.
Oh.
Maybe it's just crazy because, like, I'm a pretty crazy guy and this is my pizza.
Hey, it's crazies.
So, Zarin, what's your ridiculous takeaway?
Oh, dude. You've just given me another reminder. One, you made me want to go back and start paying attention to F1. So, good on you about that. You reawakened my love for the speed. But two, and I always tell people in my family this when they're like telling me something like, oh, did you see such and such was in the news? They're going to get this person. And I'm like, how rich is he? They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, look, just tell me how rich is this person. And I can tell you the likelihood that we're going to get justice in this case. And they're like, well, he said, I'm like, okay, no justice. He's too rich. There is this constant thing. And I wish it bothered more people, but it's, you know, it just becomes like something that makes people like, kind of jaundiced to the idea of justice. But we allow and we know that rich people are going to get away with this stuff. And then they do. And we're like, well, that's how it goes. So that way, when you're getting bribed, the person you're getting bribed feels lucky. They're like, oh, I'm in the right spot to be getting bribed because he's going to bribe somebody. I just happen to be the one. You know, that's what seems ridiculous to me. So there you go. We know rich people are going to do it and they still get away with it all the time because everybody is. I joked, oh, it's the best life. They have the just being able to kind of like, you know, paper over your mistakes or able to like lay down a bunch of ball bearings over rough ground. That's what that type of money is. And then we joke that it's F you money, but it's more than that. It's also F me money. Do what I want, you know?
And it's F1 money.
Exactly. And it's well played. F1 money. What's your ridiculous takeaway, Dave?
Very well said. I don't know how much more I can add to that other than by saying, you know, this proves that people tell you crime doesn't pay. Crime pays.
Oh, yeah, it
absolutely
it does.
Pays. And this guy, like you said, he telegraphed it from the beginning. He's like, I don't want to work. I want to make a lot of money. And I don't care about breaking rules, breaking laws, breaking morals, whatever. I'm just going to go through life, you know, making the money I want to make, taking it.
I think that we should restate that old saying. Instead of saying crime doesn't pay, getting caught doesn't pay. I think that's what it is.
You got it. That's it. That's my story. That's
great one. Thank you for sharing that one. Elizabeth missed a dope one. So thank you, D.
Thank you. You can find us online at Ridiculous Crime on Twitter, Instagram, et cetera, et cetera. You can email us at ridiculouscrime@gmail.com. We have a website, which honestly needs more attention, at ridiculouscrime.com. I think we have mugs for sale right now. Sometimes we have limited run t-shirts. You can also talk at us by downloading the iHeart app and using the TalkBack feature to leave us a 30-second message. As always, thank you for listening, and don't do anything Zarin wouldn't do. Ridiculous Crime is hosted by Zarin Ilrey Deliorsi Burnett and Elizabeth Kikozafai Dutton, and hosted, produced, and edited by Dave Giovanotti Kustin. Research is by Marissa Maquet Brown and Andrea Putropo Song Charpentier. Our theme song is by Thomas Alora Lee and Travis Michael Jackson Dutton. Host wardrobe provided by Billionaire Couture. Executive producers are Ben Neanche Se Fosse L'Ultimo Uomo Sulla Terra Bolin and Noel Il Sole Siciliano Le Ha Colto Il Cervello Brown.
Ridiculous Crime.
Say it one more time.
Ridiculous Crime.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie.
Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends. People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.